Hinonogaki. I'm from YITP, Kyoto University. Today's talk is about this, and this talk based on these papers. And my collaborators are Jyoti Moni and Tadashi Takayanagi and Tomonori and Tokiro. We will describe the our recent works, and we focus on the thermodynamical property of entanglement entropy and the time-dependent property of entanglement entropy recently. And my talk is separated in two parts. So firstly, we describe the thermodynamical property of entanglement entropy. And next, we propose the new holographic model of local quench, and we describe the result from it. Let's describe the thermodynamical property of entanglement entropy. In equilibrium system, entropy is well defined by thermal entropy. On the other hand, entropy is not well defined in non-equilibrium system. And in condensed matter physics, the entanglement entropy is a candidate, considered as a one of the candidates for the entropy in non-equilibrium physics. Therefore, it is important to know the property of entanglement entropy. And we expect naturally the question appears. This question is, are there the fundamental law, like the laws of thermodynamics, which entanglement entropy should obey? And the thermal entropy obeys the fundamental laws, the laws of thermodynamics. And natural question is that there are the fundamental laws which entanglement entropy should obey. And our answer is, at high energy, entanglement entropy obeys the law analogous to first law of thermodynamics. And this is our result. This high energy means the subsystem size is very small, and we just take the we choose the energy scale, so we choose the subsystem size as an energy scale.
Do you
want to
discuss what you mean by analogous?
Sorry.
When you say it's analogous to the first law of thermodynamics.
Yes.
Do you mean it's the same physically or it's a different thing? It's just an analogy. Because in the other slide you said that entanglement entropy is considered as a candidate for dynamic entropy.
Yes.
So what's the relationship between the two definitions of entropy, the two kinds of entropy?
So this relationship holds in non-equilibrium system too. But it is not same to this one. So this law holds in equilibrium system, but this is in relationships hold only at the high energy. So then this is difficult, this different from it.
we probably should ask you all these questions at the end of your talk, because, for example, it's not clear to me what you mean by the temperature. Of equilibrium, but again, I'm not asking this question. I hope that that will be at the end of, if it won't be clear to me, we'll pretty much guarantee to ask all the same questions. Please start.
Can I ask Alex's first question?
Okay.
And then you asked he asked about high energy, and you said it's short distance scale.
Yes.
But it's short, or a high energy compared to what? All other scales in the problem, or is there some scale that's going to characterize the problem, and it's going to be higher than that, or?
So do you know high energy means what? So this means compared to any other it is higher than any other parameters or energy scales.
Okay.
It's very, very high. This our talk's contents. Firstly, we describe the definition and property of entanglement entropy and holographic entanglement entropy. And in this section, we describe the thermodynamical law for entanglement entropy. And in this section, we propose a new holographic model of a local quantum quench. And we describe the result from it. Firstly, we describe the definition of the entanglement entropy. We divide the total Hilbert space into A and B at a certain time. And we traced out density degrees of freedom in B, and we get we derive the reduced density matrix, and the reduced density matrix is defined by this. And by using this reduced density matrix, the entanglement entropy is defined by von Neumann entropy, and this is a definition of the entanglement entropy. Let's describe this entanglement entropy by using the easy examples. We think about the product states like this. Then the reduced density matrix become like this. So this is a density matrix for pure state. Then the entanglement entropy results in zero. On the other hand, for entangled states like this, then reduced density matrix becomes like this. And this is a reduced density matrix for mixed state. Then the entanglement entropy results in non-zero. In general, entangled states have the entanglement entropy, and this entanglement entropy measures the quantum entanglement between the A and B. And next, we describe the properties of entanglement entropy. Firstly, we think about the pure state case. The entanglement entropy of region A is equal to the entanglement entropy of the region B in this case. On the other hand, for a mixed state, like a thermal state, entanglement entropy does not satisfy this equation. And the entanglement entropy of region A is not equal to the entanglement entropy of the region B. And entanglement entropy necessarily satisfies these inequality. And these inequality are called strong subadditivities. This inequality says that the entanglement entropy of region A or B or C plus the entanglement entropy of region B is less than or equal to the entanglement entropy of region A or B plus the entanglement entropy B or C. And entanglement entropy can be defined in QFT. But entanglement entropy gets divergent and depends on a cutoff epsilon. Here, cutoff epsilon is a lattice spacing. And in a d-dimensional QFT, the leading divergent term of entanglement entropy for its ground state satisfies this relation. And the leading this means that the leading divergent term of entanglement entropy is proportional to the boundary of area of the boundary. And this, it is a area law. And this property means that the region A is entangled, most strongly entangled with B as the boundary. As mentioned earlier, the entanglement entropy depends on cutoff, but we can extract the cutoff independent quantity from the entanglement entropy. The cutoff independent quantity is called universal quantity. For example, if subsystem A is an interval with L in two-dimensional CFT, the entanglement entropy is given by this. And the coefficient of this log term does not depend on cutoff, so it is a universal quantity. And C is a center charge. Next, we describe the holographic entanglement entropy. Firstly, we talk about the ADS-CFT correspondence briefly. ADS-CFT correspondence says that the gravity on ADS space is equivalent to the CFT on its boundary. And moreover, the ADS-CFT correspondence says that in ADS spacetime, the physics 1 over z equals e corresponds to the physics of the state at an energy scale E in CFT. And let's describe how defined, how the entanglement entropy is defined in ADS-CFT correspondence. The holographic entanglement entropy, the quantity corresponds to entanglement entropy is called holographic entanglement entropy. And the holographic entanglement entropy is a generalization of black hole entropy. As you know, the black hole entropy is given by this. And A is the area of the black hole horizon. And this horizon generalizes to minimal surface gamma A. This minimal, so we divide the boundary A and B, and the boundary of region A is a partial A. And this minimal surface of the boundary of this minimal surface is also partial A. This minimal surface is a surface which has minimum area when we fix the boundary partial A. And this is the definition of holographic entanglement entropy. Holographic entanglement entropy is proportional to the area of this minimal surface. Of course, the holographic entanglement entropy satisfies these properties. So, area law and strong subadditivity. And at the end of this section, we describe the general behavior of holographic entanglement entropy in D plus one dimensional ADS case. The entanglement, the holographic entanglement entropy depends on geometrical cutoff epsilon. And we divide the total system A and B, and the characteristic size of the A is L. And we expand this holographic entanglement entropy respect to geometrical cutoff. The leading divergent term of this holographic entanglement entropy satisfies the area law divergence. And B equal even case, the coefficient of log term does not depend on cutoff. So it is universal quantity, and it is a central judge. On the other hand, D equal odd case, the constant term does not depend on cutoff. So it is a universal quantity. And it is well known that this quantity monotonically degrees under the RG flow. So this quantity satisfies the F theorem in three-dimensional CFTs. So I have finished the. Holographic calculation, and it is proven in field theory side by perturbation.
In holographic computation, there is a difference between proven and check that for some holographic RG flows it is satisfied. So okay. Is it checked or is it proven?
What do you mean? So,
well, I mean, one thing is that you know you can check that in some holographic cardioid flows the F theorem is satisfied. That is not the same as saying that it's been proved.
Okay.
I'm just asking you. So, is it proven or is it checked in some example in a holographic?
So by your standards, it would be checked. In fact, I can build unreasonable theories where I could violate the F theorem.
Okay.
On the other hand, in the field theory side, Lorentz invariant, unitary theories that satisfy, well, you have to assume subadditivity. You can prove the F theorem. It has been proved.
Now, what's the word perturbative?
Perturbative, that wasn't.
Okay, so there is no, so in a field theory, given relativities, no, okay. Thank you.
Can I have something? I think I'm confused on some simple point. So when you talk about the minimal area,
yes,
is this calculation in the Lorentzian signature or in the Euclidean?
Lorentz signature.
So why can't you just deform the surface to make the area as small as you?
So we fix the at the time slice.
Yes. So it has to stay in the time slice?
Yes.
But then the answer will depend on which time slice you choose.
What time?
But I think again, when you say minimal, it's really only minimal when you're working in Euclidean.
Okay.
It's only a saddle point.
It's just looking for some extreme laws.
And he's going to be looking at time dependent situations.
So yeah, I know, so that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So I finished describe the definition and properties of entanglement entropy.
So then you say the strong subadditivity.
Yes.
I'm not sure I know would guess it depends on the minimality. It would be much harder to prove some sort of strong subadditivity for just extremal surfaces. I mean, by strong subadditivity, you're saying that the minimal area surfaces, minimal area satisfy that inequality.
Yes.
Is it really proven? Or?
Yes, really proven.
But again, it relies on extremality, but you're right. You have to worry about which way the sign goes.
Yeah.
And so in the Lorentzian, there is an extra step that you have to check that the sign went the right way.
And it does somehow go there.
And it does. But as you say, in the Euclidean or static case, minimality tells you that the sign was going the right way. But I think it is proven.
I think it is proven.
So let's describe the thermodynamical property of the entanglement entropy. So natural equation is the, remember our motivation. This is our motivation. Are there the fundamental laws which entanglement entropy should obey? And let's describe the setup. On field theory side, we think about D plus a D dimensional CFT, and we excite the site somehow, thermalization or producing massive particles and so on. Then the total system becomes a non-equilibrium in general by then. The gravity dual to it is like this. On D plus one dimensional ADS background, we deform the IR region. The IR region means that large Z region. We deform the IR geometry changes to the black hole or stars or so on. And we assume that metric given by this. And this F function and G function approach to 1 plus M times D power of Z around the G equals 0.
Can you go back? I want to understand better what are you doing with the system. So you are putting a, okay, one thing is, as you said, you can put a black hole. So that's preparing a thermal state in the CFT.
Okay.
But that's an equilibrium state. That's not non-equilibrium. I mean, exactly what you are doing. My concern, if you just start with an arbitrary geometry,
okay,
it's not necessarily clear to me that if you write down some geometry in ABS, that corresponds to a valid state in
okay.
a field theory.
Okay.
So what's your, I guess, how do you define your non-equilibrium state, and why do I have to believe that that's a
reasonable
state to start with? Okay. Why? I mean, something that would satisfy me if you would explain to me how you reach that state. You tell me that this is what I have to do with my field theory, and then my field theory will end up in this state. And those are the steps that I have to do on the ADS side to, you know, to end me at this geometry.
So, what? So,
I'm not sure what you're looking for, but. And I'm not sure where Masahiro is going, but you know, there are lots of states with a uniform energy density.
Okay.
And so the leading order, they'll look like that.
So that's a uniform energy density.
Well, that's all it is, yeah. I mean, he's doing an expansion around Z equals 0. That's the first term. why don't you show us what you're going to do with it?
Okay. So, sorry, and we divide the boundary into A and B like this. So the subsystem A is a strip with width L. And we assume that this width of subsystem satisfies this constraint. And this constraint means that the minimal surface can't reach at the region which is deformed by which is deformed. And on this background, we calculate the holographic stress tensor and the holographic entanglement entropy. And the density of the excitation energy is given by this. And for, we expand holographic entanglement entropy with respect to this parameter, and we derive the, this result. And this first term that, is the holographic entanglement entropy of QIDS. And this term is a change of holographic entanglement entropy by deformation. And this term is important. The energy of some system is given by this. And the relations between the entanglement entropy and the energy is given by this. So it looks like the thermodynamic, the first of thermodynamical law. And we defined this coefficient term as the effective temperature. Then we derive the thermodynamical relationship for entanglement entropy. And this is the effective temperature. And this relationship says that the size of minimal surface is much small, is very small, very small. This is a relationship between the amount of the quantum information and the energy in a subsystem. And that effective temperature in subsystem is proportional to the inverse of the subsystem size. And to understand whether this relationship holds in another case, we calculate the entanglement entropy in round ball case. The energy of subsystem A is given by this, and then holographic entanglement entropy is given by this. And the relations, the relationship between the entanglement entropy and energy is given by this. As the when L is very small, in the round ball case, holographic entanglement entropy also satisfies the, this thermodynamical relation. And we expect holographic entanglement entropy for any shape satisfies this relation. And we focus on the effective temperature. In both cases, this effective temperature does not depend on Newton constant and radius of ADS. So it means that effective temperature does not depend on n parameter n and two-foot coupling. So it does not depend on the detail of the theories.
Are you saying that what you call entanglement entropy depends on what the shape of your surface is?
Yes, so it's a dependent shape of surface. So
and what's the meaning of that? This is just dimensional argument that it should be L to the minus one.
So that the dependence of the effective temperature is our future work. So I don't know.
No, but you just showed that it's that it depends. So what I'm saying is that it doesn't
depend.
Even if I were to think that there is an entanglement entropy, some concept of it that is applied for this, you know, when you probe your CFT at high energies, then I would expect it to is the same no matter what the surface I have. And you're just showing that it's different. The L minus one scaling is because it's just dimensional argument. You have to have units right. So the energy is, you know, temperature times the entropy. So I guess I'm asking what's the content here?
Content here.
What's the physical meaning?
What's the meaning? Sorry. So I don't know. We don't know. So the meaning of the shape dependence of the effective temperature. And do you so it is our future work. And what do you want to know? So did
no? I'm confused. Right. So I'm saying that it looks like at this stage that you just have two numbers. One is energy, the other one is the entropy that
yes.
you can compute. And,
yeah.
and the difference between the in order to make units right, if you want to relate those numbers, you have to plug in something which is L to the minus one. Okay? So just by dimensional argument, there is this relationship. Now, if there is, I would expect, again, maybe I'm wrong, and so that's why what I want to figure
but,
out from you.
But this term does not depend on this is non-trivial. So
what's non-trivial? Okay, so this is exactly what my question. What is non-trivial?
So dimensionless, we choose the combination. It is this parameter by using this parameter, and so dimensionless parameter we use construct, and this term appear at this, but this case is not this appears. It is non-trivial.
I guess what he's saying. Well, if I wanted to try and defend it to, you know, delta S didn't have to be proportional to delta E. It is. There are two scales in the problem. Only one of them seems relevant to define the proportionality constant. But the proportionality constant, he's saying, is also independent of N or lambda.
Okay, that independent of N is not this trivial fact. Because
okay.
It's entropy. It is because of the Newton constant, right? So it must scale the same way with N.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, so I just wanted to see you.
So you're saying that the observation is a limited utility?
No, I'm happy to give a benefit of doubt, and I wanted to, what am I missing? What is here the statement that could have happened, along the lines as you are saying, that there are some things that could have happened. It looks like that the only scale in the problem, given that you pushed yourself to the UV, is L minus one. The only scale in the problem that has the right units, and there is nothing else. So you guarantee.
No. The energy density defines a scale. It's appearing on both sides of the equation as well. But you're right. The only relevant scale at the end of the day, from their calculation, is one over L.
Yeah. And then, so then the.
But that's basically a non-trivial.
No. That's a trivial fact. And then the non-trivial fact.
It's not clear to me that it's not. Why couldn't M have appeared in the proportionality?
Which one?
M, the energy, the scale defined by the energy density.
Because he scales it out. It's M L to the D much less than 1. So it's effectively M is 0.
But that could have said that the energy density was, you know, you could have ended up with an answer that the energy density was, or the change in the energy was much, much bigger than a change in the entropy, or vice versa.
I guess you're saying that there could have been an arbitrary function f of m l to the d.
It didn't have to start at order one, but it does.
What is being assumed? Are you assuming that the energy density outside this ball is zero or near?
No, exist.
What are you assuming about the energy density inside the ball and outside the ball?
Both energy density exists. And
does one outside the ball?
Both
is uniform.
Uniform, yes.
The energy density
is uniform
everywhere.
Yes, and we focus on the subsystem. Yeah.
I see. And there's no other assumption about the nature of the subsystem. Just that the energy density, just that it shares a common energy density.
Yes.
With whatever is outside.
Yes. Affair? So what do you mean? So.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it could be some fields are excited over here and over here.
Yes,
yes. The different fields are excited in such a way as you produce a uniform energy density.
Yes. If we fix the shape of the subsystem, and in this image, the effective temperature in universal in large and strongly coupled field theories, and such that eta over s equal 4 times pi over 1, so 1 over 4 times pi. And this constant depends on only the shape of the subsystem, and we don't know this means. It is our future box.
Couldn't you have a thermal a state that's really thermal equilibrium, which is uniform energy density?
Uniform.
And then,
so
that would say that this is related to Alex's question. That would say that this temperature is nothing to do with the thermodynamic temperature.
But another case is that energy is time.
With the shape.
What? So
well, I mean, if I produced a state of constant,
yes.
True thermal equilibrium with the same temperature everywhere,
but
we would expect that would also be the temperature of the subsystem.
Another time dependent case, energy is constant, so localized. And in this case, this temperature is false also.
In this case, it would have depended on ML to the D, and that function would not start with 1.
But you're right, it's not.
So this cannot be identified with,
right.
With the
thermodynamic temperature when we know what the latter means.
But I am happy now, because now I can see that it's not doesn't have to be this way.
So there's really two temperatures. You're inventing a new kind of temperature. I guess that's why you said it was we can leave the question until later. But
okay.
That's why you said it was an analog of
thermodynamics. And L is very small. This relationship is also universal. And let's describe the results in field theory side. We interpreted this limit in field theoretical language. In gravity side, this limit is equivalent to this limit. So this is translate to limits in a strongly coupled large energy gauge theory. And so this means that this quantity is much smaller than order of the n square. In a strongly coupled large energy gauge theory, then the size of the the subsystem satisfies this constraint, entanglement entropy and energy obey this equation. So I skipped this slide, and this result is calculated in field theory side, and this result does not depend on calculation on gravity side. In physical theory side, we calculate the entanglement entropy for the primary state with conformal weight given by this. And this total system is a circle. And we divide the total system into A and B. And the size of the subsystem A is L. And L is a very small limit. We expand the entanglement entropy with respect to this parameter. And the entanglement entropy is given by this. So in this case, the entanglement entropy satisfies also the thermodynamical relationship. And in this case, it is a general two-dimensional CFT. So this result suggests that the effective temperature is also universal in any two-dimensional CFT.
Sorry, and how did you define the temperature?
This coefficient is the inverse of the effective temperature. So
did you just call it, is that equation the definition of the effective temperature?
Yes.
But then how can the equation not be true? I mean, what exactly is universal about it? Is it that it only depends on the size of the interval, or what exactly
yes,
is
but
statement of universality?
So it is depend on size of the interval, but so this is depend on this effective temperature does not depend on field theory contents. So this means and parameters.
I see.
So this means universal.
Universal means independent of the field.
Yes, yes, and the field
so
theory.
So what does it depend? It depends on the size, and does it depend on the total energy of the state, or what does it?
So
just
the shape.
Just the shape. But the shape, there's not much shape in
here. You don't have a shape.
So shape means
so
meaning.
So it's always pi L of 3 for any CFT2. Is that the statement?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And so just to follow these earlier discussions, that means this temperature is always, you can calculate delta S, you can calculate delta EA, and the temperature,
yes,
by definition, is always that coefficient.
Yes.
In this context, not just for CFT2, but for any CFT, is that right?
Any CFTs. No, the two-dimensional case only.
So how is it defined in higher dimensions then? I thought it was defined as the ratio of delta S over delta E over delta S or something.
Sorry, so there are no results, so higher in higher dimensional case. So
there are no results in higher.
Yes.
Okay. Now, well, can I question again this pi over 3? So you say it's in a CFT, right? So what I can do, what if, so does that mean if I were to do it in a holography and I can include higher derivative corrections, right? So that the central charge is not infinitely large, but finite, or you know, large, but it depends. So basically, I'm saying that I can discuss CFTs where which are not in the larger. I guess is this pi over 3 is universal? You would claim for
this one was a field theory calculator.
Yes.
But if I were to do it in a holography, would I still get pi over 3 and would they get pi over 3 that is going to be the same, even if I include higher derivative correction?
You mean if you do it from the gravity side?
Yeah, just on the gravity side.
Sorry, I don't know the way to calculate on gravity side this parameter, this finite temperature.
No, but if you did your previous calculations, but you focused on a three-dimensional bulk and a two-dimensional boundary.
But this case, that case, the large N limit. In this case.
Right. Yeah. No. But. Well, okay. So you have an answer there. Is that pi over 3? or 3 over
like
pi.
Pi over 3.
Well, it's got pi in it. Or no, it doesn't.
Pi over 3 is
no, it doesn't.
Yeah,
the square root of pi.
The, this.
Yeah, this. No,
for
no, the one at the
up,
top.
Up. That is, the other
is that 3 over pi when I stick in d equals 2?
Yes.
It is?
Pi over 3?
Pi over 3, sorry. Pi over 3.
Yeah, okay. That's what he wanted.
So this is the inverse of the effective temperature, sorry.
Right, right. No, no, but you're saying, okay, so you skipped over that, but when you calculate holographically in the large N limit
yes.
with a two-dimensional boundary, you get exactly the same answer you said.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
And this.
So
this,
Alex is impressed.
And this calculation is done by these people.
Can I ask a small technical question on depth calculation?
Okay.
I don't know, you didn't do it, I guess, but in the cylinder, there should be a zero mode associated with the, if there's a massless field, that, for example, there'll be a zero mode. How do you take that into account in computing entanglement entropy?
Sorry, I don't know the calculation in detail. So we use the result.
You just use it.
Sorry. And up to here, the thermodynamical property of the holographic entanglement entropy. Next, we describe the time-dependent property of the entanglement entropy. Our motivation is in the time-dependent case, the relationship also holds. And another motivation is we would like to construct the gravity dual to local quantum quench. And we would like to study the behavior of local quantum quench in detail.
I just, again, sorry for being interrupted. So what does it mean the relation holds in the time-dependent case? I mean, what does it mean? The temperature change. So the way, so far it looks like that the way you define entanglement entropy as a ratio, delta E over delta S. So what does it mean that, do you mean that entanglement entropy is constant?
Temperature is constant.
Is that, that's what you mean? That
yes. So in some limit.
Why can't the temperature change with time?
In some limits, that effective temperature does not depend on time. So in small subsystem case. In this limit, this relationship holds and the effective temperature does not depend on time. But so this relationship holds in time-dependent case.
So is that statement that you made is true no matter whether you have a strip or you have a round ball?
Yes.
It's time-independent and it depends whatever the equilibrium temperature would have been. Equally, sort of time-independent entanglement temperature would have been. Yeah, so, okay. So then you kind of identified in a non-equilibrium situation, you identify the quantity that is time-independent,
yes.
Which is this entanglement temperature.
This is the entanglement temperature.
Okay.
Yes, so it does not... it is not related to the thermal temperature or something. We describe the local quantum quench briefly. So we prepare the two independent systems of each other. And we join them and add a new local interaction between them at a certain time, like this. And then the total system is excited, and this system beyond the time evolution. But it is difficult to gravity dual to construct a gravity dual to this local quantum quench. It is difficult, so joining operation in ADS-CFT correspondence. So we try to construct the gravity dual to approximately local quantum quench. The way is we prepare the one system and we add the energy locally to the system at a certain time, like this. And alpha is the excited region size. So I don't have no time, so we skip the result. I would like to talk about the result. So we calculate two cases. So we add the energy at the center of subsystem A, and we add the energy at the uncentered point. And the distance from the center to the point which we affair, we add the energy. And case one, we calculate two situations. One situation is the size of system is much less than alpha. And this, in this case, peak alpha is the size of the region, excited region. So we excite the energy, we add the energy and excite the system is excited. The excited region, size of the excited region is called alpha.
So it's much bigger than the size of the system.
Much smaller, yes. In this case, so yes, much. Yeah. And in so in this case, the L is greater than alpha or equal to alpha. This and in this case, the peak appears at T equal around the T equal L. And case two, case is an uncentered case. E is the point where we add the energy. It is this. And the distance from the center of subsystem A to E is xi. And we calculate the entanglement entropy changing the xi parameter. And xi equals 0. It is a xi 0 case. It is a xi is 2 case. It is a xi, for xi equal 4 case. And we interpreted this result. By using the entangling pair interpretation, we interpreted these results. At T equals 0, an entangled pair appears. And this pair propagates with speed of light. And T is less than L minus xi. The both sides of entangling pair is included in region A. So this the entanglement between them does not contribute the entanglement entropy of region A. But around the T equal L minus xi, the one side of the entangling pair reached at the boundary of region A. And the entanglement between them starts to contribute to entanglement entropy of A. So appears the entanglement entropy. Entanglement appears. And T and T around the T equal L plus xi, the another edge of pair reached at the boundary. And the both sides of the pair include in region B. Then the entanglement between them stop to contribute entanglement entropy.
again, you're saying this is a universal behavior. It doesn't matter how you add this extra energy.
Universal. So sorry. In this case, so region is not a region. Is this in this?
No, I don't. I mean, you didn't say what you add. What kind of energy you added?
Yes.
The result only depends on the amount of energy.
Yes.
And the location in which, the size of the region over which you added. The location of that region compared to the.
No. It depends on the way to add the energy. It depends on method to add the energy. Yes. It's a one case.
So which method was used here?
Sorry, this result depends on this holographic setup. So it is, this is the way to choose the, add the energy.
Right, but in that holographic setup, you didn't specify what kind of energy you added.
What kind of?
I mean, it could be a mass, it could have added a
pion. Yes. It does not depend. But so time dependence is contributes to the behavior of entanglement entropy, maybe. And so. And as mentioned earlier, in this case, holds this thermodynamics law. And this thermodynamics law says that the entanglement entropy is proportional to the density of energy, and this peak corresponds to red line's peak, so it is consistent with this relationship. So I have no time, so I skipped exactly. I should skip the exact result, should I?
Can I just? I haven't quite really understood what you did in the holographic calculation. Did you solve the Einstein equations in the neighborhood of the boundary? Is that where these results are coming from?
So do you want the method to...
Just in some very general way.
I
don't have the slightest idea, so any little hint.
So, sorry. Our method is like this. So. On AD, D plus 1 ADS background, a particle with mass m force. Uh-huh. It is a specialty. And so the trajectory of the informing particle is like this. And we calculate the entanglement entropy on the geometry back reacted by this informing particle. Right. So it is special. Describe the exact result briefly. We calculate the entanglement entropy exactly in three-dimensional ADS case. Exactly means that non-perturbatively, and we add the energy at origin, and we each time slice, we independently calculate the entanglement entropy of interval, which centers at xi. We study the xi. And the results like this. We set alpha, and so in this case, alpha is smaller, much smaller than alpha. L is much smaller than alpha. In this region, the amount of contamination seem to be conserved each time. So time in blue line corresponds to t equals 0, red line corresponds to t equals 5, black line corresponds to the results at t equals 10. And each time slice, at each time, the amount of quantum information seem to be conserved. And in this region, thermodynamical relation holds. This equation holds. So the energy is conserved. Then the quantum information is also conserved. So it is true. And in this case, the amount of quantum information seems to be conserved also at the late time, but it does not seem to be initially. So peak appears and grows like the like big peak at the point. We introduce a new quantity like this, and this quantity is integrated out with respect the xi. Xi is a center of subsystem. And this quantity approaches to constants at the late time, like this. And the time which this quantity reaches at the constant depends on the width of the interval, like this. And the saturation time is L over 2. And we introduce, to describe this behavior, we introduce a new quantity. This quantity calls entanglement density. The entanglement density measures the entanglement between two points, like this. And we assume the entanglement between two bodies only contributes the entanglement between two points. So this quantity counts the number of entanglement pair between two points. This quantity is defined by this in mathematically. So and we describe this behavior using this quantity. So we found that entanglement density between them is dominant. We call it dominant entangled pair. And when t is less than L over 2, the distance between dominant pair is less than the width of the interval. Then the intervals which center is at this region includes the both points of dominant pair, like this. So these intervals do not contribute this quantity. On the other hand, at when t is much, t is bigger than L over 2 case, the distance between a dominant pair is larger than the width of the interval. Then the intervals included in C and D contribute this quantity. Then the number of intervals which contribute is saturated. And these are conclusions and the future work. And thank you for your attention.
I still don't quite understand why temperature should be constant in time independent, in time dependent cases. Now, I'm not disputing the calculation. In other words, I can see situations where you can contrive it to be time independent. But I mean, in the real world, we know we turn on ovens and the temperature goes up with time. So why are there not also situations where the temperature
not
that you define is changing with time? I mean, why shouldn't that be true in general? Maybe it's true for the situations you've looked at, but it doesn't care. But just on general grounds, why should I require or expect that to be time independent?
So we expect that in this region, so small size, the subsystem is small size, so the temperature of subsystem is constant.
But for larger sizes, it's not going to
be. Yes.
Okay, so in general, it will be time dependent. This
yes,
just
yes.
A consequence of time
yes.
size.
Yes.
Actually, turning the same thing around, it's not just the size. You can have size as small as you want, but if I make change as fast as I want, the rate of change is fast, then I am effectively in the limit where sort of in you're constraining how fast I'm making my quench, basically. Mm-hmm. And so again, it's kind of along the same lines that if the rate of the change is much lower than the inverse length of a system, sort of the inverse length of a system is the highest scale, and sort of you're working at that scale. So I guess it's not a surprise that it's time independent.
Yeah, in those limits, but just on general grounds, I don't see why it should be.
And it is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if in principle, in some other models where you, okay, I still don't understand what would be the temperature of equilibrium, but everything is time dependent, and it depends on the rate.
Yeah.
Which is what you expect.
Yeah, that's exactly what I expect. So I agree. You could say T is delta E over delta S. I just don't see why, in general, it's going to be time dependent. Should not be time independent. Right.
But this formula doesn't even have anything in it but a few geometrical quantities. So, right? So, I mean, how can it, suppose you would just, I think what's being said is if you wait long enough, you would expect the temperature to change. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, even if the system is small, if you wait long enough, if you create a whole bunch of heat over here, if you wait long enough, it's going to flow over here. That's just using ordinary thermodynamic sense of temperature, which maybe is not the same as this thing. But once that happened, you would expect the temperature of the subsystem. You know, you light a match over there, but you wait long enough.
Yes.
The heat from that match will come to where your little subsystem is. So why doesn't it change the temperature of that subsystem? How come, you know, that formula doesn't seem to allow it to do that?
Why? So why?
I mean, I think these are all the same question in some
way. Yeah, it's another way of putting it.
Do you, why? So why? So,
Or is this a short time? Is this formula for a short time only? Maybe, or sufficiently short time.
We expect the changing rate is related to this parameter. So in this region, the rate is smaller than L. So then we expect change that this temperature does not change.
But so is this formula only true for a certain time, and then if we wait too long, the formula may become invalid?
Over
very long time scales, could the temperature as defined there change with time? I mean, Raphael's argument is you've got a warm thing over here, just wait a while, it'll warm what's over here, even if only by a little bit.
But I think the answer is no. I mean, you're lighting a candle over here, and now there's a flux of energy.
Right.
But he's still only probing a tiny little part of that wavefront. And he gets some kind of relation like that, and it's just characterized by the scale of his little region or the part that he cuts out. I mean, that was in that particular limit. He was doing more or less what you were saying, and it's, you know, the E is changing and the S is changing, but the proportionality constant in the way that he's setting it up is just a fixed geometric constant.
So what's being said then is really that you can contrive situations where delta E is proportional to delta S, leaving the constant fixed.
Yeah.
So then
the question is
why are those interesting situations relative to other ones?
Sorry?
Well, why are those interesting situations relative to other ones? It seems to me it might be more interesting to think of when the temperature could change with time instead of when it doesn't.
Yeah.
But the claim is the contrivance.
It's believable there are somewhere it does not change.
Yeah.
Sure. No. Okay. I mean, in some sense, if I took the word temperature out, you might try and phrase it in terms of, you know, the ratio of, I don't know, information or entropy to energy that's being carried by your wave packets.
So there are cases where that's constant.
Yeah, but again, why should we be, what I am, again, kind of along the same lines, why should we be surprised that that's the case? If you take a CFT and you have a well-defined UV fixed point, and you tell yourself that I'm going to go into high UV limit, then everything is going to be dependent by the scale, your highest scale. And then, you know, you get this proportionality relations. And then you can start saying, I'm going to do time dependent, but, you know, the things will change at a rate much, much slower than the scale at which I am measuring. And of course, you will not see it. So, I guess I am still confused what the physical meaning of all of that.
The claim is that the temperature, I mean, that the energy is changing and the entropy is changing.
Yeah, but that's just a property of a UV fixed point. That has nothing to do with, you know, he sets up his dynamical situation in such a way that dynamics simply doesn't probe the high UV of the theory. That's why he gets time-independent situations. At least that's the way how I understand.
But then how is it that the entropy changes? How is it that the energy changes?
Before people go, I don't know if there was an email, but I think David has volunteered to get, okay.
There was an email, yeah.
Yeah.
4 o'clock.
What's
that? Oh, it's at 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
To give
okay.
What? I didn't get.
David Skinner is going to give us another seminar this afternoon at 4 o'clock on twister strings and 4D gravity. Sure, yeah. Work on that one.
It's a combination seminar.
Sorry, I interrupted your question.
No, I was just wondering, how is it that the energy...
How? So sorry.
How could that... I mean, you're taking a very small subsystem, if I understand.
Okay.
A very small region, basically.
Yes.
Space. So there'll be a large energy just sort of associated with the fluctuations of the fields in those,
yes,
in that region. How does these energies compare with that energy scale? Does it have to be much less? Or is it,
so,
can it be comparable?
So
this delta E, for example.
Delta E. So
I think the answer is the formula. Maybe I just didn't understand. You had ML to the D. D is the spatial dimension, is that right?
So sorry.
You had a formula that ML to the D must be much less than one.
Yes.
That's a sort of assumption that you're always making.
Yes.
For this calculation. And
yes.
What does M represent in that?
So what is that M represent? So
just how is it defined? What is M?
So M is M is the temperature in field theory site. Or energy scale.
It's the temperature.
So in black hole case.
So an L to the D. But then it's not
dimensional. No, but if you thought that what you had was a thermal bath, your M would be something like N squared, counting the number of degrees of freedom, times T to the appropriate power to make it an energy density.
So M is an energy density.
M would be an energy density.
Okay, that I thought he said it was a temperature.
I think it's the energy density. Well, but he's imagining if it was a thermal bath that was creating this energy density, it would be related to the
temperature. It's connected. It's equivalent to the temperature.
Yeah.
But its literal definition is, I'm just trying to understand the unit. It's a very trivial thing. So
do you have,
is
way
M
way back at the beginning of the talk, you had a formula, I think, that said T sub TT equals something with an M
okay.
on the side. That formula way up.
This one.
So that's the energy density. There's a bunch of numbers in there, but that's basically n squared degrees of freedom in the field theory times m.
Oh, the thing of the coefficient is.
Okay. I think. Oh, maybe I got that upside down. No, 80 on scale over, yeah.
N times M. So anyway, so M is, so if that's a pure number, then M is just an energy density, like
this. Yeah.
But then you say you multiply it by D, by L to the D.
Right.
So that should be an energy. Or is L the space-time?
Space-time.
I mean, is D the space-time dimension?
Yes, D is a, so boundary, the dimension of the boundary. CFT, so.
But D is the boundary CFT, the total dimension of the boundary CFT.
Yes.
Okay. I see. So what does it mean that ML to the, so ML to the D minus 1 is just the total energy in that region?
Yes.
And so the same, the total energy in the region is much less than 1 over L, the size of the region. So that's answering my question, I guess, that the typical fluctuation energy associated with that size is much bigger than the energy density that you're allowing to be present in that region. So it should be regarded as somehow small perturbations off the fluctuating ground state. I mean, off the. So the energy, in other words, the scale of the energy you've added is much less than the characteristic energy scale associated with that region. With the UV
fluctuation. And that's why those
UV fluctuations. But then the interesting thing is that there's some sort of universal behavior, right? You claim it's trivial, maybe.
No, I am not. I think it's independent of the, you know, of the dynamics, right? If you ask the question of the physics of UV fluctuations, that's like UV fluctuations, you can say, in a ground state. I mean, it's independent of the energy density, so they would not be sensitive to any dynamics.
So this is. Yeah, this is some statement about perturbations of state around the UV, I mean, around the ground state, where the perturbations are very small compared to the characteristic energy scale of the region and of the region you're looking at. Uh-huh. So is it like, I don't know, this is just a guess, I mean, just but not even a guess, but just, I mean, there's a sort of temperature associated with these you might think there's a temperature associated with these UV fluctuations, but we know that quantum mechanically, globally, there's not.
Yes.
It counts as zero. I'm sorry, there's an entropy associated with it. Mm-hmm. But we know that there's not because it's a pure state globally, but if you isolate a little region, then of course, there is an entanglement entropy.
Hmm.
And
so, sorry, what do you want to,
picking up on that, well, I don't know, I'm trying to make some sort of story.
Sorry.
To make
no, but then what they're looking at, so you have the vacuum and there is this big, if you like, short range entanglement.
Right.
Then they're adding a small perturbation
they're
to the state.
They're adding a small perturbation.
And they're saying that that creates a change in the entropy.
Right.
It leaves that UV part alone, and this is the extra.
Yes, and we.
Right. So, but then this is saying that those things that are normally not thought of as thermal behave in a certain sense thermally, because the formula you wrote, dU is T, dE is TdS, that's true for perturbation of any thermal density matrix, for small perturbation of any thermal density matrix. So this is saying it's as if you had a thermal density matrix under. In this very small region, when you're dealing with small perturbations.
Yeah.
So, I mean, on one hand, it's kind of natural. On the other hand, it doesn't seem obvious, exactly obvious. Contra olives, maybe. I'm not sure. And maybe if you think about it, do you think there's a way of thinking about it where it becomes clearly true? Or is it even clear what I said? It probably sounded kind of. I mean, you're getting a thermal behavior for the, what you're getting is that the change of the entropy of this local object only depends on the change of its energy.
Yes.
That's the sort of, if there's a surprise here, that's the surprise,
right, but,
I think.
But the proportionality coefficient depends on the shape of this region.
Yes, that's right. So so this isn't the ordinary, I think this is not the normal thermodynamic entropy.
But if this is, but I guess if you were sort of pushing the analogy with sort of equilibrium things, then wouldn't you expect it to be independent?
If it was a true global equilibrium, yes. But if it's just some sort of statement that this artificially created subsystem that you just created by carving out some region of space, if it shows thermal-like behavior, then it could, it seems to me, very well could depend on the shape of that subsystem.
Mm-hmm. And so you think it's a non-trivial fact that the change in the energy is proportional to the change in the energy? For small changes?
Yeah, you know, everything becomes trivial when you understand it well enough. But so I'm really saying I don't understand it that well. It doesn't seem obvious. I wouldn't have been certain, at all certain, that it would go like that.
If you can make a very rapid change in the geometry, then you do this computation, which is sort of static-looking computation, and it makes a change in the geometry at a rate much faster than the inverse length scale of the system.
The thing is that this, if you're perturbing about equilibrium, this formula that d is tds. That's true for arbitrary perturbations about equilibrium, right? Even if they're not to another equilibrium state. They can be to a highly non-equilibrium state. It's just an identity. But it has to be the crucial thing is it has to be a small perturbation. And it seems like, so it's just to linear order that's true. It seems like that's what he's effectively assuming by assuming that this inequality, that it's actually a very small perturbation on the degrees of freedom that are contributing most of the entropy, but which are these very high frequency modes.
So then this is just a linear response?
It's just a linear, it looks like it's just a linear,
so
it's
you
just a linear response, but how would you know that it, how would you know that the local physics is like equilibrium, like thermal equilibrium? I mean, it's not somehow totally out of left field, it's not completely crazy. I mean, it's not something where you would have said, my God, I would have never suspected something like that. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem like it's obviously going to work either.
And the other option would be?
What's the other option?
Yes.
Well, obviously it had to work. That's the other option. Or the third option is, well, it's wrong, you know. We'll take it as wrong. Words of wisdom.
I think there are questions that remain to be answered. Well, why don't we think, Matt? Not for your